There are many ways that we can define our journey through life. But a lot of milestones along the way that we can all look back on and remember monumental events in our lives. There have been a lot of Kodak moments, and I can use that phrase here this morning. I can't use it at school with my teenagers because they have no clue what that means. But there are a lot of Kodak moments where they don't know what a Kodak is. And secondly, they never saw those commercials that were out there. But we know, so I feel free to use it here. Those moments when celebrations were going on, when there were great memories and when pictures were made and we kept them. By the way, if you don't print your pictures, please, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir probably, but it drives me crazy that our children don't print their pictures. Got to have those pictures printed and saved for posterity as we move into the future. All of us, when we look back on those Kodak moments, when we look back on those mile markers of life, when we look back on how our life is defined, I would imagine that for most of us at least, if not all of us, that those moments, those times in our lives revolved around family. Family was at the center of those moments. My family's been valuable to me in many ways for my entire life. And I'm going to run through just a couple of things real quickly just to illustrate how families can be valuable to us just from personal experiences. But as I do this, I want you to think about your life in ways that that your family has been valuable to you. On September 11th, 1949, a little crying baby was born in Montgomery, Alabama, just another hungry mouth to feed. It didn't make the news, but you know, my birth meant nothing to the rest of the world, but it meant something to my family. They took care of me. I appreciated all that, you know, that they did for me at the time, not as much as I do now when I look back on it, but my family was very valuable to me from that day forward when I couldn't do anything. 60 years ago, my mother and my father and my two sisters and I left Fort Deposit, Alabama, left extended family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, and moved to Mobile, Alabama, where we did not know anybody. Daddy's job transferred him down here. And so it's kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies. We had our trucks loaded up moving from Fort Deposit, but there was no mansion to move into. That was the biggest difference there. But at that time, my extended family back home meant a lot to me. It was very, very valuable. And we got to see them once every 3 weeks or so, something like that. And those weekends when we went back were very special. 58 years ago, my little sister, 2 years old, passed away from flu, the Hong Kong flu in 1958. And that was very sudden. There was total disbelief on my part that that happened. I can remember being an 8-year-old boy and going through the grieving process, and there's just absolutely no way that happened. And she's going to come back any time now, and I'm going to see her. And that was a very hard time for our family, for my mother and father, more so than the rest of us. But through the support and the help of our family, aunts, uncles, grandparents, cousins, our church family here in Mobile at Sage Avenue, we were able to go through that grieving process normally and to move on, even though my mother still remembered every year when it was Debbie's birthday, and she remembered how old Debbie would be, and we'd have a conversation about it at least once a year. And but our family was extremely valuable to us at that time. 4 years later, after Debbie's death, I was born again. I was baptized in a swimming pool at Gulf Coast Bible Camp. That was a great day. My family was excited, and they supported me. They were very valuable as I grew again from a baby in Christ, and I began that growth process all over. 4 years after my baptism, we found out Daddy had cancer. Pretty serious case of cancer. The doctors performed a pretty radical surgery for 1965 in that they took out one of his lungs and took out a lobe of his remaining lung. And they did not give us a very good prognosis, probably about 5 years or so. And Daddy wound up living 25 years. I remember the strong support that we got from the church at Sage Avenue at that time. I don't know if Ray and Dawson ever repented or not, but they told the people at the hospital that they were Daddy's brothers, I understand. And they were, but probably not in the way the hospital thought. But so they got to visit Daddy back in where the family went, and I'm glad they did because they were a family. And that family was very, very valuable to us at that time, in addition to our family otherwise. I didn't realize this until I started writing this down, but 3 months later, on January 28th, 1966, my grandfather died. And I didn't realize that was just 3 months after Daddy's surgery. When Grandpa died in Fort Deposit, there were many, many radical changes that had to take place. Again, I was in a state of disbelief. And I can remember several things. One was when I went to church that Sunday morning, I came out of church, and it hit me when I walked in. Grandpa's funeral was going to be on Sunday afternoon. He died on Friday night. And I walked in for the first time in my life. Grandma and Grandpa weren't sitting up on the third pew from the right over on the left, third pew from the front over on the left side of the auditorium. And I walked out, and that was okay. And I walked out, and on the front porch, men up there would always gather along a rail that ran on the front porch and talking about football and dry weather and complaining about how cold it was or whatever else. And all the men were there except for Grandpa. And at that point, it hit me really, really hard. And I felt an arm on my shoulder. And we walked on out to the car. And I didn't realize who it was at first. And I looked up, and it was Dawson Morrow. My family was very valuable to me at that point. And in many other ways, and I won't go any further into that. August of 1967, I moved to Auburn University and started college. Did I learn to appreciate family? It was very, very lonesome at times during that freshman year. And I appreciated family more than I had ever appreciated it in my life. December 1968, while I was still in college at Auburn, I got a glimpse of the future when it came to family, because I met this beautiful sophomore girl at the University of South Alabama named Frieda Troll. You got it right that time. We married in June of 71. WT was present for that, and several of y'all were present for that too. And after graduation from college, and two families merged. Frieda's family and my family came together. They were very valuable to us in supporting us and helping our family get started in the right way. And I'm very appreciative for all that was done in that time. And through the years, a lot of things happened. Babies were born. Older people died. Younger people entered the picture. Things were changed. They were rearranged. A lot of changes in there. But family remained constantly valuable to us at that time. In 1994, Frieda and I made a pretty radical decision. After much prayer, we decided that I would change my career from the construction industry to becoming a teacher at Mobile Christian School. So we tightened our belts. And we trusted Matthew 6:33. And I'm here to tell you it works. That change would not have been possible. It would have been much harder, and it would have had a short life if the family wasn't all in. And Frieda and the boys were all in that, and we made that change, and I'm here to tell you, God's good. But family was valuable during that change. There are a lot of other things I could talk about, but I'll not take time on that. And I'm sure your life has been defined and by similar mile markers, and you've seen evidence of the value of your family in your journey of life. I want you to just consider how valuable families are in many, many different ways. And we're going to look at some of those ways in just a few minutes. What I mean by family, simple definition, cold, academic, it's a group of people who are related to each other, including people who lived in the past. Family, present, family in the past, ancestors. I want to work with a little bit more detailed definition. It's a lifelong joining together of a man and a woman in marriage for the purpose of providing stability for sexual fulfillment, emotional development, intellectual development, and social development of all members, including wife, husband, children, and elderly family members from previous generations. That's a pretty long definition, but we'll go with it anyway. Just miscellaneous thoughts about families. Family is a community of people where moral values are taught, where training on spiritual matters is most effectively accomplished, and where cultural heritage is passed on, the way we do things around here. Love of the land, love of the ocean, whatever it is, your cultural heritage is passed on. Family is where we're first taught about love. Family is where we should find security and continuity. Family is the first natural society that we enter. It's at the center of social life. It's a vital cell of society. It's a basic unit of any society, and it's the most important unit of any society. It's family. Now, I realize I don't need to convince y'all that families are valuable. I'm pretty sure everybody here understands how valuable they are. And I'm sure we all have memories of many ways that our families, current family members today and those from the past, have been valuable in many facets of our life. I don't need to convince you of that, but my goal this morning is to help us to appreciate the value of family in all aspects of life. And then I want us to consider ways that we can fortify those families so that that value can be appreciated by generations yet to come. Families are valuable to individuals. They're valuable to individuals because they provide companionship. Genesis 2:18, we read, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." So God made a companion for Adam. He made a companion, not a competitor. It's somebody that works alongside us, that helps us. We help each other. Families are valuable to individuals for fulfillment of sexual drive and for procreation. It's God's plan that within a secure, loving, permanent relationship of marriage, that children should be born, that our sexual innate drive that He gave us, this great wedding gift that He gave to us, that's where that is fulfilled. Genesis 2:24 says this, "For this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." Notice the order. We leave, we cleave, and then we weave. We become one flesh. Our society today has got that backwards. There's a lot of weaving going on before there's any leaving or cleaving. And we have cheapened this great gift that God has given us to the point that it is nothing more than a bodily function. And God's not pleased with that. That's not God's intent. God told man and woman in Genesis 1:28, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Paul wrote this to the Christians at the church in Corinth in 1 Corinthians 7, verses 2 through 5. "Because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer, and come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." Families are valuable in that regard. Families are valuable in nurturing children. In a properly functioning family, we We see love, identity, security, and stability provided for children. The things they need to grow to become all that they can be. Been several studies that have been done, and one study indicated that children from strongly functioning families have higher academic achievement, they have higher education aspirations, goals, there's a stronger sense of self-determination, there's a healthier self-esteem, they have fewer behavioral problems, and there's less of a chance of them becoming sexually active as an adolescent. Families are valuable to our children. Families are valuable to mom and dad. There are a lot of health and economic benefits that marriage is linked to. Married couples report greater sexual satisfaction. The highest levels of sexual satisfaction are reported by individuals who were in a married, monogamous relationship. Married women report higher levels of physical and psychological health. Formerly married women reported the worst health, while never married women fell a little above them, but under married women. There's less stress on the job, less child stress, financial stress, and relationship stresses. Married people tend to experience less depression going along with that. And there are fewer problems with alcohol. Men who are married and stay married tend to be less depressed than those who remain single. Married men make more money, about 20% more. Marriage is associated with a lower mortality risk. Compared to married people, those who have never been married have nearly twice the mortality risk. That's significant. Divorced and separated individuals ran a mortality risk more than 50% higher than those who were married. Bottom line is this, God knew what he was doing when he said it's not good for man to be alone. And then he made a companion for Adam. Thank you, Lord, for our families, for recognizing that. Families are valuable to society. Now, just as there are benefits to individuals, there's a cumulative benefit when we all come together to society. And I wanted to stay as positive as I could today, but I've got to hit a few little negative things here. Studies have shown that when a father is not present in a home, we see the following. 71% of high school dropouts are from homes where the father's not present. 71% of teenage pregnancies are from homes where the father's not pregnant, where the father's not present. 85% of children with behavioral disorders comes from a home without a father present. 90% of homeless and runaway children. 63% of youth suicides and 85% of the youth in prison are related in some way to a home where the father's not present. World Congress of Families determined that the breakdown of the family is responsible for 90% of the poverty around the world today. Married women, though, are less likely to experience poverty. The poverty rate was one-third lower than the poverty rate of women who had never married. One sociologist went back and did a study and has made the following estimates. If our society today had the same level of family stability that our society had in 1960, there would be 750,000 fewer children repeating grades in school. There would be 1.2 million fewer school suspensions, 500,000 fewer acts of juvenile delinquency, 600,000 fewer children receiving therapy, and 70,000 fewer suicides per year. That's significant. The society in which we live would be infinitely better if we had strongly functioning families. Families are valuable to the nation. You look at Israel. The health of Israel was directly linked to the health of the families that made up Israel. I know they grew out of one family, but as time went on, God warned them numerous times, do not associate with the people around you. Do not give your daughters to be married to them or take their sons. Or don't do that, because they will pull you away. Israel did not listen over a period of time, and they ceased to exist. Judah was carried off into captivity. Solomon's choices for wives were on the cutting edge of that downfall in Israel. His heart was not wholly devoted to God. Goes back to his family. In the United States, when strong traditional families live in a community, we have what sociologists call mediating structures. When the family breaks down, so do the mediating structures. Now, mediating structures are a neighborhood, churches, schools, voluntary associations. When they're functioning as they should, then that limits the growth of government. There's no need for government to be as large as it is. It's been estimated that the public cost of family breakdown and the mediating structures is about $112 billion per year. Let me say that again. $112 billion per year. Now, it's tax time. And if we want to cut our taxes, we need to strengthen our families. There are many other reasons to do it. I'm being a little bit facetious when I say that. But $112 billion per year. Now, that includes police, prisons, welfare, court costs, and social services. So there's a lot that goes into that. Families are valuable to our nation. Valuable to our nation because a democratic form of government will decline unless families teach children self-government, independence, and basic moral values. When that doesn't happen, democracy cannot continue to function long term. Families are valuable to the United States, to all nations around the world. Because families are valuable to our churches. I don't need to tell you that. We know that. Families are the root source of evangelism for our children. And our families are fertile ground for spiritual development. And the key to raising godly children is what takes place in the home early on, from the day they're born on. In one study, it was found that as far as influence for the gospel, number one influence, and this was everybody. This was friends, youth ministers, preachers, you name it. This is a whole ball of wax. Number one is mama. Number two is daddy. And number four is grandma and grandpa. Three of the top four influencers for children are all ranked within a very close-knit family. Then other family members and all fall into place there. It has been said, and I think there's a lot of truth to this, that the moral, spiritual, and relational foundations of a person's life are in place by age 13. Pretty much in place, not totally. But who a person will be when they become an adult in regard to their beliefs, their values, their morals, and their ideas about faith is pretty much who they are at age 13. That's a little bit scary sometimes. When I look at 7th and 8th graders at school, bouncing off the wall and a bunch of hormone-driven little pods of energy. But deep down inside, that's pretty much who they're going to be. Now, that's not to say that not to limit the power of teaching the truth to people. But and making changes when they're adults. But the fact is, if we can get this work done early on, we're way ahead of the game. We can prevent rather than trying to cure. And that's a whole lot easier to do. Consider the following passages. In Deuteronomy 6, 6 through 9, one we know well. And these words I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. When the kids walk out of the house, they see that commandment. When they leave home and go out into the world, it's written on the gatepost. They see those commandments. It's an interwoven aspect of all parts of our lives. It's the way we live. It's the culture. It's the way we do things around here. It's not forced. It's not a formal devotional necessarily, where you sit down and open the Bible and sing two songs and read and have a prayer or whatever. Those are good. But this is something that happens when you're bird hunting and when you're deer hunting and when you're bass fishing and when you're, sorry, girls, I left y'all out, women, late wives, I'm sorry. But every aspect of your life, when you're on vacation, when whatever, that's God's plan. Psalm 78, 1 through 8 says this, "Give ear, O my people, to my teaching. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings from old, things that we have heard and known that our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, but tell to them, to the coming generation, the glorious deeds of the Lord and His might and the wonders that He's done." What's God done for your family? You need to be telling that to your children. Not necessarily opening the Bible and reading it to them, but this is, let me tell you what God did for us. Boom. He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers to teach to their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should, why? Why should we do this? So that they would set their hope in God. Not in the world, not in money, not in their friends, not in sports, not in academics. Set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments. And that they should not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation whose heart was not steadfast, whose spirit was not faithful to God. Sitting around a fireplace talking about family, about things that God's done for us. Guys, family is valuable to church because it's a source of friendship evangelism. WT, I remember when you spoke in the summer of 1988. On Wednesday night, you talked about friendship evangelism. You asked us to raise our hands. Who was converted by this and who was converted by a friend or a family member? 98% of the congregation raised their hand that night. Friendship evangelism has been shown to be the most effective method of teaching the gospel. Certainly the most cost-effective. Relationship with other families, with our church families, their relationship with other families at the ballpark, at the gym for basketball games, at football games, at piano recitals or whatever, those relationships we make with other families are great outreach, awesome outreach. Fortified families that are strong in the faith are effective ways to reach those who will never come walk through our doors on Sunday morning. They're missing a lot of great lessons, David. But they're not just going to knock our doors down. I think that's been proven through the years. A properly functioning Christian family is a tremendous outreach for friendship evangelism. It provides the support network that's necessary once they're taught the gospel and they... It's been said that we need six friends, minimum of six friends, to support us as we grow to maturity. That's where the families really come in there. Families are important to the church because that's how we learn, that's where we learn how to function as the church. I mean, the love of the wife by the husband, that's Christ's love for the church. The respect of husband by the wife, the church's respect for Christ. That's where we learn how to respect God, our Father. We learn that first and foremost in the family as a child, and then it's just a lot easier to carry on. The saying has been used for years, as the family goes, so goes the future of the church. Well, let me tell you what one survey showed as far as church families, and I'm not talking about Church Christ, only I'm talking about evangelical churches, relatively conservative churches. They surveyed 11,000 young people who attend evangelical churches. Now, these are not kids in the world. These are kids sitting in church buildings. Okay. Of these 11,000, only 12% reported that they have a regular dialogue with their mother on family or life issues. 12%. 5%, only 5%, have a regular dialogue with their father on faith or life issues. Only 9% of youth have experienced regular reading of the Bible and devotions at home. 9%. Only 12% of the youth have experienced a servanthood event tied in with a spiritual activity. Church group going and doing service work. Only 12% have experienced that with a parent. I don't mean just with a church group, but with their parent. Only 12%. Sticky faith is a term that's been used for a faith that sticks with our children even after they leave home, go to college. And Mike Williams will discuss that some tomorrow night. Not sticky faith, but carrying on in faith on into college. That sticky faith has been shown to be more the result of a lifestyle found at home in the family rather than a program that's a part of the church. Not against programs in the church, but I'm just saying if the family is not doing its part, it's almost impossible for the church to do its part. So how are our families going today? If we look at those stats, how are our families going today? What does the future of the church look like? Families are the thermostat that controls the temperature of the church. We need to be really mindful of that. Families are valuable to God. I mean, God created families. And got through, He said, hey, it's all good. He created them for us. He loves us. And He created them for us. Families are valuable to God. God sent His Son to earth as a man to live in a family. The big family was Abraham's family, nation of Israel. But His immediate family, the mother and the father, stepfather of Jesus, His father here on earth, were faithful and righteous people. Of Mary, it was said in Luke 1:30, and the angel said to her, do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. Wouldn't it be awesome to have an angel come up and say, hey, Ricky, don't worry about it. You found favor with God. That would be awesome to be told that. I can't imagine Mary being told it. Well, man. His father Joseph, or Mary's husband Joseph, it was said about him when he was considering divorcing Mary because she was pregnant before they got married. In Matthew 1:19, we read in Joseph, her husband, being a righteous man, did not want to disgrace her and planned to send her away secretly. So God arranged it so that Christ grew up in the kind of family we're talking about today. They raised Jesus in the Hebrew faith. Jesus grew physically, He grew socially, He grew spiritually, and He developed into a mature man. Luke 2:52 says this, Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Families are valuable to God because His church is a family of faith. I mean, God's our Father. You have received the spirit of adoption as sons by which we cry out, Abba, Father. Romans 8:15. We're God's children. Romans 8:16-17. The Spirit Himself testifies with our spirit that we're children of God. And if children, heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ. If indeed we suffer with Him so that we may also be glorified with Him. God's our Father, we're His children. Jesus is also God's Son, as we know in many places. And He's also our brother. In Matthew 12:50, Jesus said, for whoever does the will of my Father who is in heaven, he is my brother and sister and mother. Families are valuable about teaching us about God. The church is the bride of Christ. Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 11:2, for I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy, for I betrothed you to one husband, so that to Christ I might present you as a pure virgin. As we learn how to do church in our families. Families are valuable to the church. Very, very valuable to the church. So what do we do? David, how much time I got? About another 20 minutes? Okay. You start flashing numbers at me so I won't go too long. So what can... Huh? Oh, no. Whew. Okay. So what can we do as our churches to fortify our families? I think our churches need to assist our families to develop properly, to live according to the purposes and the promises of God. We need to help our families build their homes according to God's design found in the Word and not Satan's design found in the world. The church needs to develop families in ministry. That's our goal. Families who are going out to do ministry. That comes in with three functions. There's education, shared activities, and counseling. This is one way of doing it. We could talk a lot about the education part, but I've got a minute and a half. Shared activities include things like family retreats, service projects in conjunction with the youth ministry, counseling, advising families as needed from a pastoral counseling standpoint, referring families to professional counseling when it's necessary, and assisting with financial costs of that counseling if it's necessary. Family ministry should be intended to first have families at Creekwood, but turning them into families in ministry. But it's an inreach to strengthen the families in your congregation, which turns into an outreach to teach the gospel to the world. We want our congregation to serve, to function as a loving family of God. We want the congregation to set the example for our physical families. We want our families to become nurturing incubators of discipleship. That's where it's taken and grown from a child up. Reach out to other Christian families to edify them, and reaching out to families in the community. We want our marriages to function as God intended. We want our families to function as God desires. We want every family in the congregation to feel valued and appreciated. And a really important thing, we want every generation in the family here to interact with other generations. Too often we stratify our generations and they don't interact, and a lot of lessons are lost. Psalm 78 is not fulfilled. Flip to the last page and the last paragraph. As we believe that God is more concerned about the holiness of our families than He is about our happiness. If there is holiness first, then there will be true joy that follows. The direct goal of a congregation should not be to build happy families. That's not the primary goal. Our goal should be to build holy families. Families that function in accordance with God's plans that are found in the Bible. Then there will be happiness. There'll be blessedness. There'll be true joy when that happens. Faith then will be transferred to future generations. People in the community are going to notice a difference in our families as we interact out in the community. Then we'll have more opportunities to teach the gospel. And when all that's said and done, God's going to be glorified. Our prayer has been that our family will glorify God. That's my purpose in life. And when our families are holy first and are taught as they should be taught, then God truly will be glorified. There's a lot more that could be said, obviously. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this morning. Tomorrow morning, we're going to take a look at fortifying our families by recognizing strengths in our families and building off of those strengths. And we'll have more to say about that. And we'll look at six, there are several, but we're going to limit it to six characteristics of strong families. And we'll look and see exactly what those are. Try to help us assess our own families and how do we measure up in that category and how can we become stronger. Thank you.